park or wildlands like I do, take a moment to learn how to make your home or cabin survivable. Go to the internet to firewise.org or write to the Interior Department at Firewise, Washington, D.C., 20240. Take a moment, save your life and your memories.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. The time is 1 minute after 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Good evening.
Don't we sound bassy tonight? We sound really deep-voicey.
What do you mean?
Yeah. I don't know what it is. Something in the air, but wow. Feels good to be here on this early Tuesday evening in the end of September. This was our last September show, by the way.
And the first one of autumn.
All right, just tell me, bring it up a notch.
It's the first show of autumn.
I feel like I'm talking to a 16 RPM record.
Yes.
Well, we have a lot to talk about tonight, but first things first. Now, when this happens, Kyle, you stand up. Now, I'm standing up now. Stand up, Kyle.
Wait.
Oh. Yeah. Not hard, is it? You just got to move the microphone up so that... And again, I'm sorry if we're talking over this and we're not supposed to do that. But when the Star Spangled Banner plays, you generally, you know, you stand up. Right? Just get on your... And, you know, it's a ball game or something going on. You just sort of look straight ahead and try not to do anything untoward.
And everybody stands up for different reasons.
They do.
But they all feel like they're obligated to do just at least the minimum, which is that, standing up, right?
Singing
That's the controversy.
Singing our national anthem tonight is John McCormick.
Yeah, it's a good recording. It sounds kind of... like it's on an old wax cylinder.
Yeah,
one of
those Victor 78 RPM.
Nice.
It's
yeah, the metal sort of big cornucopia record player things, like the old RCA logo.
Now we're coming to the end of the song now.
The gramophone.
Or the anthem.
Okay.
But you may not know this, but the national anthem actually has several lyrics.
Yeah.
So we're going into the second stanza now. And now, Kyle, I'm going to ask you to take a knee. I haven't done this yet. You know, okay, now I'm taking a knee, and so are you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kneeling now for the second stanza.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, none of us, probably go through the entire campus, we won't find anybody knows the words to the second stanza. It's actually not even the second stanza. I think this is the fourth stanza. But whatever. This takes a lot more work than standing, I'll tell you that. How do you feel?
I feel like
Am I doing
one
it right?
of my knees is going to be sore in a
yeah,
little bit. Maybe
exactly.
Like I don't know, like maybe 10-15 more minutes of this, and I would no.
Well, fortunately, it's not that long.
Yeah, I don't know how long I could sustain it. I guess is what I'm saying.
You know, the football players, they wear knee pads, so they can probably do this a lot easier.
Oh yeah, they can kind of like incorporate knee protection into their uniform, even if it's not something like. Expressly, well, I guess you're using it on the field.
I'm also leaning against the tables, and they're not doing that. They're if you don't do that, it really hurts pretty good.
Oh wait. So
wow, all right, this is the end now. So we have to stand up. Now, how do you stand up without the support of? Wow, that's it. Oh, wow! Look at this. I tore my pants. Look at that.
Oh man,
I got a nice rip in my knee. So, if you're going to criticize people for taking a knee, try it yourself. It's not easy. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do. So it's a pain. Standing up, anybody can stand up, but kneeling down, why is kneeling down seen as disrespectful? I know our stupid president thinks it's disrespectful, but I mean, why does anybody else reach that conclusion?
I don't know. It's I think fake. I don't think it's real. I think it's just hyperbole. It's like it's a talking point. I don't see the disrespect in it. It's honestly a choice, right? Some people cover their heart. Some people cover the other side of their chest. Some
right.
people don't do it at all. Some people mouth the words. Other people actually, you know, really emphatically shout the words. Some people don't say the words at all.
You know, if you, when the Star Spangled Banner started playing, and you're a football player, or anybody really, and you started juggling at that point, I would say, okay, that's somewhat disrespectful, I guess. That's probably not what the Founding Fathers had in mind.
There's a lot more disrespectful things.
Yeah, and you can certainly go beyond that. But kneeling down, in church you kneel down, right? And you're talking to God, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to be pretty damn respectful there. When the pastor tells you kneel, because that's what you're supposed to do. You don't stand, you kneel. It's reverence. So I just want to know, at what point was it defined as disrespectful?
Even like knights kneeling before a monarch. I mean, it harkens back to this like medieval days.
Yeah, when you get knighted, you kneel down.
You'd kneel before, or if you're visiting a ruler, you would kneel and ask for permission to visit or be a part of.
And Game of Thrones, you bend the damn knee. That's what
they
tell you to do. Bend your knee.
Bend the knee.
Which is hard if you're in traction, but most people can. So. This is a weird time in our history because, as usual, stupidity is calling the shots. And
has characterized this action during the anthem as disrespectful, which is our quandary at this juncture.
Right there, I would say that, you know, it's not disrespectful to question, to think, to be introspective when an important thing is happening, such as the national anthem being played. I think it's more respectful than just blindly following. Our president, of course, does not see that and has turned the entire conversation on its head because it was never about disrespecting the flag in the first place. It was about the danger that black people face when they go out into the street at the hands of cops, and, you know, it's something that needs to be addressed. And that was a way of addressing it at that moment in time. He's turned it into a racial issue. He's turned it into something that, a racial issue not in the way that it was originally brought out. It's basically something that he has oversimplified and turned into a referendum on him yet again.
Yeah, I was going to say it's about his opinion of this action. Now, instead of what the original intent behind it and spreading that message to make people more aware of the salient inequities.
Mm-hmm.
And yet again, here we are, trying to sort of co-opt the framing of it.
So instead of talking about what's going on in Puerto Rico, which is a humanitarian crisis that we have rarely seen in this country, we're talking about football and the NFL and standing for the Pledge of Allegiance or the national anthem or what have you. And it's just an incredible waste of time that this is what we are focusing on instead of actually addressing the issues that are being focused upon by these actions in the first place, by trying to make our daily lives better, by trying to be more inclusive and more equal. Instead, there's just more hatred, more misunderstanding.
And disputing it. Right?
Exactly.
Right? Just anything to dispute that it's real or that it's happening or that someone is suffering. Why? I mean, why are we spending so much time disputing whether others are suffering or not? Can we just please listen and validate one another's concerns and experiences and actually try to work on them? And that came to being over this healthcare attempt again.
Mm-hmm.
The thing actually failed today.
Yes, thank God for that.
Hallelujah for the 50th. I don't even know.
Can we make it so that they can't do this anymore? Can we have a referendum that says, all right, Republicans, stop it already. Do your damn job or get out.
No, they're too busy writing laws to make it so Trump can't pardon himself.
I don't think they care about that either. But, you know, wait, think about it. Why are they so intent on repealing Obamacare? It must really be something that bothers them this much that people are actually getting access to health care. Think about why that bothers them that much. Why should they be so intent on turning that around? Because it's what, a step towards socialism? Well, you know what? There are a lot of things that are socialistic in civilized society, such as fire departments that come and put out your house without getting a check first, or libraries or
FDA.
Schools or Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all kinds of things. It's just, it does not hurt poor people. It might cost rich people a little more, but it doesn't hurt rich people. It's just, it's good for people who are greedy to question this and to try and repeal it. And they just keep doing this over and over again. And, you know, we need to see it for what it is. We need to stop this. We need to stop them from wasting all this time and money by spending every waking moment trying to undo the accomplishments that Obama was able to get in his term. You realize now, you know, this is what we were talking about this when it was happening. You know, people weren't supporting it enough because it didn't go far enough. Well, look, I think it went pretty far for them to be this upset, for them to have to try and repeal it, what, 50 times now? Obviously, it was a step in their eyes, so it should be a step in our eyes. Not the last step, but a step all the same.
Yeah, and it's spiteful. It's spiteful, bureaucratic obstinance that anything else is sort of not their priority because they've this vendetta over something that is emblematic of Obama, our first black president's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't stand to leave it in place. They must make their mark in whatever way is possible, even if it's self-destructive and or futile. In other words, not going to work. And here we are, thankfully, yet again, facing down these attempts and not having them repealed.
You say thankfully, and I'm thankful as well, but think about how close it was. Think about if John McCain hadn't done the right thing, if Susan Collins hadn't done the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, one senator away from having all of this dismantled, from having millions of people lose their health care, from having all of us pay more and be locked out of certain things because of pre-existing conditions and whatnot. You know, you can. I heard part of that debate last night, and it's just it's a slick salesmanship of trying to convince you that less is more, and trying to say that the market will dictate and everything will be fair. But as long as you don't have the government, the only entity capable of actually regulating all of this, to have them not involved at all, and just trust all the big business people to do the right thing. Yeah, how's that working out for you? In the world of pollution and global warming. Oh, that's right. We don't believe in global warming.
Well, setting drug prices or anything in this realm.
Well, you know, 200% increase in a drug price over 1 year. That's you know, that's what happens sometimes. There's nothing wrong with that, is there?
How do you? Yeah. All right. Yeah. We heard the arguments about research and putting these profits back into drug development. Right.
If you do this, then we will never get a cure for these diseases. Because they are such jerks that they won't even do the research unless they make a ton of money. That's basically what they were saying yesterday. If we regulate drug prices, if we do what they do in other countries and have prices actually be somewhat reasonable, they're just going to lose interest and they won't do the research because people don't care about people. They care about money. So you take that away from them and nobody's going to do anything. That's the world they live in. They really do live in that world. Well, fortunately, that world lost again. But it doesn't mean they're going to stop. They're going to keep pushing back. And, you know, all it takes is one person caving, one senator caving, or one more election to go badly. And, you know, all of a sudden, we don't have the numbers to overpower this. Fortunately, you know, and this is something we need to remember ourselves, with every bit of resistance that we exhibit, every pushback that we have, we do gain something. It might not feel that way because we have to listen to all the crap on TV and in the news every single day, and we can't believe how bad things are getting. But it would be so much worse if we weren't pushing back. I was thinking about this before. I'm so much prouder to be American this year than I was last year, not because of the people in power, not because of where we have gone, because of the reaction, because of how people are responding to all of this. That makes me very proud. That makes me very hopeful because it's that strength that will save us, that will bring us back from the brink of whatever it is we're fast approaching. And, you know, when this is all over, I think we'll be a lot smarter. I think we'll be going in a much better direction, and I don't think we're going to go back to where we are right now.
Yeah, and it's not this, like, big heroics. I mean, there are heroes involved, but it's not any one big heroic act. I think it's the amalgamation of all the small acts. You've seen it, like, with Jimmy Kimmel's speech and a very heartwarming story about his family, but also those heroes of children and parents going and actually visiting their representatives and mm-hmm. and people of all abilities, but you know, those folks, you know, getting their wheelchairs and so on, you know, into the houses and the buildings of our government and being willing to put themselves on the line and be dragged out to make the point that they're there and they have an opinion about this and that this legislation dramatically affects them and that they will not be overlooked and
you're talking about the people that went to the hearing yesterday.
Absolutely, yeah.
About healthcare and it wasn't even accessible to the handicapped. That was what was amazing about this. You couldn't get in if you were handicapped, so they were shouting and demonstrating and just making themselves heard and seen. And yeah, that makes a difference. It might feel like you're doing something wrong or you're creating a disturbance. You know, folks, you need to make a disturbance when something is wrong, is going badly, is an injustice. That's when you need to stand up and make a scene, because that is how you get people's attention. And it's because of people like that that we don't have to worry about this again until the next time.
Yeah, yeah. And it's those little – I mean, it seems like such a monumental thing, but I think, as you said, I couldn't be more proud in this last year, because I think a lot of the escalating tensions and rhetoric have motivated people, I think, to be more bold, but also more accurate, more thoughtful, and pour really more effort into and energy into the things that will have an effect.
Mm-hmm.
And less into entertaining stuff that is a distraction, and we've basically just let the show go on in the White House. But I think the very serious issues are surfacing and are getting heard. It just needs to be accelerated ever more.
And here's the thing:
in the face of it,
we have to be open to people expressing themselves, saying what's on their mind. And, you know, I worry that that many of us become too judgmental as far as who is saying the right thing. Are they saying exactly the right thing, or do they agree with me on all these points? You know, let's not be fussy about this. Let's take the opposition that is by our side and walk with that opposition, regardless of whether or not it's 100% or even 80% of what you believe in. If it's more than 50% against the things that we don't believe in, that's good enough. And if they don't believe some of the other things you say and you don't believe some of the things they say, that's fine, too. You don't have to agree with everybody on everything. You know, we should be able to handle disagreements. We should be able to handle controversy. We should be able to handle mistakes, missteps, using the wrong terms, the wrong words, all sorts of things like that. You know, we are not going to get anywhere by having purges, by weeding people out, by having purity tests.
Yeah.
None of that is to our advantage. We need a large, huge group of people to push back against this and to make things go back in the right direction again. There's plenty of time to bicker and argue later about other particulars, but right now, you know, we're going down a hill pretty fast, and we need to start pushing the vehicle back before it plunges off the cliff. And it's going to take all kinds of people to do that, not just the kinds that we agree with every single little bit of information about.
Yeah, discourse is flawed and can be quite messy. I say things incorrectly all the time. My entire life, you know, I'm falling down the stairs wanting to say something more succinct. Succinctly.
You
know, we all have what we think and then how we articulate it. There's misunderstandings left and right in politics and in society. So I think, but this idea of being able to accept differences and hear it, that came out in, I think, John McCain's request this week, or last, in the last several weeks, over the the concept of general returning to general order, mm-hmm. Which is really a part of government that we haven't seen in a long time. You know, and he's kind of right about that in a lot of ways. That these issues actually may push because of the expiration of the 50-50 mm-hmm. Temporary exemption for the vote on health care may push Republicans and Democrats closer together, in fact, if they want to get anything done. But not on all issues, but perhaps on this, because they'll need 60 votes.
Well, there's going to have to be some working together, since they can no longer just get what they want through a simple majority. That's expiring.
But it's very hard with the polarizing in the background. As much as mm-hmm. I think both sides kind of want to ignore it, I mean, I think Democrats are very, very much unified in a lot of ways, or at least willing to look at the drawing board. And Republicans, for all their folly, you know, whomever is in line or not under investigation or falling out of line, there is plenty of colleagues they can commiserate with and join forces with to consider working with Democrats. So there's quite a contingent, but that executive is itself becoming this quite noisy background.
Well, you know, you mentioned,
to work in.
You mentioned John McCain, and that's a great example, because you know, if you say something to the effect of John McCain did the right thing, he stepped up when it mattered and stopped this thing in its tracks. People will say to you, yeah, but did you hear what John McCain said about this and that over the years? He's no friend of yours. You know, it's hypocritical to praise him. And I say nonsense to that. People can do the right thing sometimes, even if you disagree with them 90% of the other time. And for this, he did the right thing. And I think we should acknowledge that and go right back to criticizing him when he says something that we don't like.
Yeah, that was noted, I think, in some of the coverage this weekend, like 60 Minutes and C-SPAN, that he had high aspirations for spending even more on defense budgets, and that those points sort of fall in that category of, I'm not exactly going to be collaborating with John McCain on everything, but there are certainly areas where we need to really listen to one another to hash out the details that work for everyone as a whole, for the country at large.
The people that just fall into lockstep and never question, like a good little Nazi Mike Pence that we have as our vice president, just backs Trump up on everything he says, never questions, never does anything that would put him in disfavor with the ruling party. And that is something that is frightening. That is something that you definitely have to be wary of. And the question comes up, well, okay, so you get rid of Trump, you get Pence. Which is better? I don't know. What do you think, Kyle? Which is better, having Trump or having Pence? Because they're both scary in their own way.
It's really tough. I would say, though, the erratic and uncertain situation surrounding Trump mm-hmm. kind of makes it undesirable. The Pence presidency, though, I could see as being really problematic, and it's in many of its own ways. So you're trading one set of problems for other problems.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you think of it more as, we tried this for a couple of months, and now we'll try that. Let him, wreck his opportunity, just as Trump has wrecked his, for a little while, and then see who's next. Just consider it like little sabbaticals of leadership, mm-hmm. sort of strung together, like a little daisy chain. And then as soon as they need their wrists slapped, you know, the people and senators and everyone steps in and takes the wheel. And then, you know, it's like teaching a kid to drive a tractor or something. You know, you want to, you know, eventually jump in and then throw them off the tractor. Actually, I don't know. I made that up. But anyway, the point is, it's going to be, I think, really a little bit of access from each of them be the best outcome, as opposed to any one of them staying for very long. Because I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's I want to see that. I know that there's that you just any length of period, any length of time would just give them too many opportunities to create whatever swamp they need or dismantling things or just generally being corrupt. And I think that we've established this campaign and this administration to have unprecedented corruption and just inexperience that and have not accepted it. And I think there will be a reckoning in due course.
Well, okay. My feeling is that Trump has to go.
Yeah.
I mean, period. That's just non-negotiable because he does not understand half the things he's talking about. He is a loose cannon. He is putting millions of lives at risk just with the North Korean situation alone. I mean, you know, they are scratching their heads saying, what in God's name is going on here? And they don't believe in God. You know, it's something that is almost comical watching. And, you know, a horrible regime as it is, I have more faith that they will do the right thing than that he will do the right thing. And think of what that means. I honestly believe that. I think they're sane enough to know where the line is, and he is not. He basically, we were having this conversation the other day, and I'm very happy with the analogy I drew up because we had a bunch of months ago walking in the street in New York, and we had some crazy guy who was yelling all kinds of insults at us. And I said, Kyle, you know, if we hadn't just kept walking, if we had turned around and we had challenged this person on all his points, do you think we would have convinced him that he was wrong? Do you think we would have been able to walk away from there without any further exchanges? No, we would have. I'm not comparing. Well, I guess I am sort of comparing North Korean leadership to a crazy person in the street. But, you know, if you engage with everybody who shouts an insult at you, you're going to be wasting a lot of time, and you're probably not going to get anything out of it, and you could wind up in a lot more trouble than you started out with. That's the situation with North Korea. Trump does not know how to walk away from that. Somebody says something about him or to him, he has to answer, he has to one-up them. And there was just no winning in that situation. He doesn't understand that this could go very, very badly.
You know, you raise a good point. Whatever happened to Trump not telling people at ISIS and whatnot, our adversaries, what he's going to do?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to that? What happened to being coy? Because this is a perfect situation to apply that, you know, given what you've said.
Well, to him, this is being coy. Because
right. No,
I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to do something, but I'm not going to tell you. And maybe you'll be going away. Maybe your whole country will be wiped out. You know, crazy
speeches.
Things like that.
Yeah, it's very vague, very nebulous, very kind of like woo-woo, you know. We don't know what'll happen.
You know,
won't be there.
North Korea's been playing the same game now for 50 years. They've never seen this before. They don't know what's going on. You know, there's an article in the Post today, the Washington Post. It's the funniest headline.
But he's not wittingly playing their game.
North Korea taps GOP analysts to better understand Trump and his messages. In other words, they're going around his back saying, what in God's name is this guy doing? Can you help us, please? Mitch McConnell, anybody.
Really?
They cannot figure him out. North Korea, the country that we can't figure out. So they're trying to find out what he actually is up to. And, you know, if you were to actually engage them in conversation, you would have an interesting conversation with them. And you might actually get somewhere. That's not going to happen with Trump. And, you know, if they were a little crazier, we could be going down a very, very dark road very quickly. Fortunately, that's not the case right now. Not to say it won't be the case in another couple of weeks if he does something else or thinks that he can get away with something.
Yeah.
So that's why Trump has to go, because he is a loose cannon. He's dealing with things. It's not just a bad business decision. He's not going to just lose a casino. He could lose a state. He could lose a country. He could lose millions and millions of people based on a miscalculation. He's not qualified. I mean, you might agree with some of the things he says. You might agree with some of the things that a guy in a bar says. Doesn't mean he should be in charge of the nuclear codes, right?
Yeah, you know what I resent about that too is that he's the one that gets whisked away into a bunker.
I know, right?
We get our little matchstick houses and duct tape and plastic. What was that? Was that Rumsfeld's formula back in the day?
you know, Rumsfeld seems so incredibly sane, and Reagan, and even George W. Bush, and when you think about what these people are responsible for, wow, we have fallen so far. Hey, if you'd like to join the conversation, we'd like to have you with us, 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. You know, everybody's qualified to speak about this, too. You know, you see experts on TV, and you see all kinds of...
it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, talking heads, but, you know,
no such
everybody's
thing.
Got an opinion, everybody's got something to say, but, you know... We all have to look at the bigger picture here. We have to look at the rest of the world. We have to look at the future.
We have to be smarter than these not smart, quote, pseudo leaders. I mean, and really be reasoned and think about what's best for humanity, what's best for your community, your family.
Yeah, and ask yourself, are things really getting better under this regime for me? And if so, how exactly? I'd like to know. Let's see who's out there. Let's take a couple of phone calls. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Go ahead.
How are you?
Good. How are you? Well, you know, kind of frustrated, but good.
Life is frustrating sometimes.
It is. It really is. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from my car, actually.
Okay. Well, where is your car?
On Nichols Road in Selden.
Okay. I didn't mean that specific, but okay. Nichols Road in Selden, County Road 97.
97, that's right.
That's right. Well, what's on your mind?
I'm following your conversation, and you can't pin this man down.
No.
Every single day, a new atrocity is expressed from his lips or his tweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't quite
understand. It's
amazing. What's the recourse when you have a man like that in office?
Yeah, and you know, we're all kind of like stunned. We're fascinated by it. We want to know what's he going to do next. How's he going to top himself? And ordinarily, that makes for good television. That makes for good ratings and all that. But you know, we're talking about the future of the country. We're talking about our lives, our future, our economy. And at some point, we really start to look. We already lost quite a bit. You know, we're not getting things done. A lot of positions are unfilled. A lot of legislation is not getting accomplished. And we're falling behind the rest of the world on so many fronts. So, yeah, you know, the entertainment factor is going to wind up hurting us severely once we start realizing that nothing is actually happening.
Well, all we can hope for is that he has totally discredited himself, even amongst his own party and his own allies.
Continuously. No one will, yeah.
Continuously. I mean, he can't get anything passed through the House. The House, he did have the health care bill passed. But he can't get it through the Senate because even his own party doesn't trust him.
Yeah.
They realize it's a loose cannon. So that being said, we can only hope for three more years of that where he's completely unproductive.
Yeah, but imagine three more years of this. How much damage is going to be done to this country as a result of nothing getting done for 3 years?
Well, go to BernieSanders.com and we'll work on it.
Yeah.
Hopefully that will build up a little bit.
It's
all
true.
Right. I said my piece. Thank you for the radio.
Thanks. Drive safely.
Thanks for listening.
631-632-WUSB.
That's 3 years that other countries get a leap on education and projects and economic issues. I mean, we're just kind of idling while the rest of the world advances and grows.
Yeah, renewable energy, things like that are being discouraged now in this country. We hear reports. I hear in Florida it's illegal to switch to solar energy. When a hurricane hits, say, and you want to use your solar power, you can't do it because it might cause some kind of an issue with the electric company, and you have to go through all these channels, and it takes forever.
They make extra strict safety or fire standards or something?
Well, to the point where it becomes a real burden and something that you don't want to do. And we see it in other places, too, where all of a sudden the amount of money you get back for selling excess electricity to the electric company is cut into a third of what it was. So you're being discouraged from using renewable energies. The power companies, the oil companies, they're making more money, and it's all about them. It's taking care of their needs. Meanwhile, other countries are going 100% green. They're putting up wind turbines and solar panels everywhere. In this country, those companies are going out of business or being regulated to death. And it's kind of ironic when you think that's what one of the main arguments of the Republicans is, that overregulation is killing innovation. Well, you know, there's no better innovation than green energy. Where's that? You know, where's the support for all that? It's not coming anytime soon from this administration. That's for damn sure.
But you know where it is coming from?
Where?
The new leadership, the new generations, the people that are going to stand up and are going to listen to different communities and cities, the initiatives that are put forth at the state and regionally and in certain areas or within municipalities and public works departments all across this country.
Locally, yes.
Those decisions and those case studies and examples and demonstration facilities will inspire and be instructive for politicians that go on to replace some of what we're facing now.
Well, you know, the thing is,
the sooner the better, too.
The local politicians or the local leadership in various parts of the country are taking giant steps. You might see it on a statewide basis, such as the state of California or the state of New York. You might see it on a citywide basis, such as New York City or Seattle, where basically leadership in these places is taking a stand, is saying, okay, you know what, you might have opted out of Paris, the Paris Climate Accord, Trump, but we're not. We're going to continue to live by this. We're going to raise the minimum wage. We're going to do these things that we think are right, and the people will see how that actually has a positive effect. And that kind of resistance right there is dramatic and needs to be supported. And it's something that's not isolated to one part of the country or another. One of the things we saw when we were traveling recently in the Deep South and in the Midwest, you see these pockets where people are getting things done. And that's where you really have to focus your energy is locally and just applying these things on that level where you can make a difference. And people will share information, and it'll grow in that way.
Yeah, and it's going to be a setback if we're not active, if we're not able to get past where we're at, this mm-hmm. sort of bureaucratic stagnation that we're faced with, or rehashing things that people want to take apart and not actually like improving quality of life. And it all leads back, like you said, to the accumulation of capital for the very few who claim to be consolidating and streamlining government and giving us all sorts of independence. But the rest of the world will be choosing innovation and new technologies that really make sense down to your bottom line. For private companies and municipalities, whereas these efforts to make it more difficult and deregulate all the profits that then get offshored by entrenched interests that aren't interested in new technologies or changing their models continues basically support for more of this stuff that is even more destructive. I mean, we're just talking about one issue, be that energy, but it's really all of them, all of the things that we're missing out on that will really compound at the end of this term. I mean, we really will be looking at a lot of the same issues, if not more. Disaster relief. I mean, we're obviously seeing an acceleration of that given this hurricane season. But you know, we'll still have issues with transportation. We'll have issues of jobs and retraining of our race and inequity in the justice system, and on and on.
Protecting refugees, protecting immigrants from it's horrible to say, but the agents who come in the night and kick in their doors and take them away, or that raid churches and drag them out because they're in the country undocumented. Horrible things like that that we actually have to face. But by standing up and saying, you know what, you have the weight of, of our local government behind you. Our police department is not going to enforce these laws because they're wrong. They're unconscionable. Various things like that that people have found a voice in. And, you know, the amazing thing, and I'm learning about all this, is that the voices come from places you least expect them. Who would have thought the NFL would be the sounding board for social injustice or freedom of speech or the right to dissent? The National Football League. I never would have guessed. But that's one of the things that makes me proud. And, you know, we should not be, you know, a lot of people are saying, why are we talking about football? These people make millions of dollars. Not the point. If you have a platform, it doesn't matter if you're an entertainer, yeah. if you're a singer, a writer, someone on the radio, or someone who plays sports, you know, you have an obligation if you have a platform to the public, to say something, to express yourself in a way that is acceptable in your eyes, that is positive in your eyes, not to simply be quiet to injustice, not to stay silent and be complicit. You have an opportunity. You have an obligation. And it's good to see people living up to that. I don't care if they're playing football. I don't care if they're making $1 billion a year. They do the right thing. They're doing the right thing. And we need to encourage that, support that, and thank them for that. I want to know, in these football stadiums, never been to a football game in my life, in these football stadiums, what's going on in the stands? If I listen to Trump, everybody is booing. Everybody is on Trump's side. Nobody supports the football players. Well, okay, I want to know, are people actually kneeling in the stands as well? Would you kneel in the stands? I don't know if the stands are conducive to kneeling. But the point is, you know, what other ways are people expressing themselves? Hey, what about college sports? Stony Brook here, right? The Stony Brook football team. Anybody taking a knee, you know, in the football games here? Or other college teams?
Are you allowed to? Is there a policy?
Think about that statement. That's what Trump is saying, that the owners should step in and tell these players who are majority black that they are not allowed to express themselves. Think about that. Sounds a little bit familiar, doesn't it? Owners telling black people to shut up and do what they're told.
It's got some interesting historic parallels.
A little bit. So, you know, things like that, they surprise me, you know. They just come out of nowhere. And the amazing thing, you know, it started from one guy expressing himself during the Obama years. During the Obama years, expressing himself, paying the price for it. You know, all the praise I'm giving to the NFL, they still have not hired Colin Kaepernick for any team. Nobody has stood up and said, you know what, this guy would be a valuable asset for us. That's embarrassing right there. Somebody needs to fix that because he's a good player, and he's got moral conscience, which it's a good combination.
His career shouldn't be disrupted, or put on a extended hiatus simply for him expressing himself.
And you don't want him to go to the Canadian Football League either. That would be a real tragedy. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Go ahead. Speak up. Well, they hung up. If you're just going to call to hang up, maybe there was badly timed. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. You were saying, Kyle?
I was saying that I lost my train of thought. But we're talking about news of the week. We're talking about football. We're talking about NFL being as good a platform as any to show the world that you stand for justice and that inequity is rampant and we need to address it.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a couple of phone calls coming in. Let's take this one. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Go ahead.
This is Ahmed Ali calling in. In regard to the football players taking a knee or not standing, when I was in high school and junior high, I would not participate in the Pledge of Allegiance or the National Anthem.
I knew some kids in school that did that.
My teacher told me that if you're going to do that, you have to leave the assembly, the auditorium. If you don't want to stand and Pledge of Allegiance, if you don't want to stand for the anthem, then stand outside of the auditorium and come back in when it's done.
They didn't go that far at my school, but I know there were some students in at least several of my classes that did not participate in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah, I think that's wrong. I think you should be allowed to express yourself in the assembly like everybody else.
You got to go back. This is the 70s.
Sure.
All right, this wasn't now. And the other question I like to ask, for all those people who are talking about that these are privileged people who should stand for the anthem, the people that they're taking a knee for, when have any of these people stood for them? When have any of these people stood for those who don't have the rights and protections under the Constitution?
Mm-hmm.
And are deemed, the Constitution still says that Negroes, black, and so forth are three-fifths of man. Their language hasn't changed. It hasn't been eradicated by the 14th Amendment. If you read the amendment, it only benefits corporations. Mm-hmm. And then it's not even talking about the 13th Amendment. But, okay, let's talk about when has this country and this anthem stood for the underprivileged? Donald Trump is a prime example of a privileged individual, a spoiled brat, you know, rich boy, who hasn't, he is not a veteran. What has he done for the United States other than take profits on the backs of blue collar? He doesn't even pay all of his contracts.
We don't know what he pays for income tax or anything. There's so much we don't know.
There are plenty of people who are coming forward that are saying that they've done work for him and they've never been paid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going, you know, for the last 2 years since people have been looking at him. So
it's,
this is
yeah.
In America.
It's embarrassing. It really is embarrassing.
Tax immigrants who come here, who work, who pay taxes, and you want to build a wall to keep from this type of people from. But yeah, we don't know that he's even paid taxes.
Yeah. Listen, sir, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for bringing up all these thoughts because it's just so much to digest, you know. But keep being angry, keep being outraged, and asking all these questions. We'll get there.
Have a good night. Thank you for being there.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Take care.
For illuminating the conversation, too. And,
I want to thank all the – we had a bingo on the phone. Do you see that? Every single phone line was lit.
Yeah, filled them all up.
I have not seen that on the new phone system. I'm sorry for the folks we didn't get to, but we will get to you. We'll have time to talk about all this, and we'll open the phones earlier next week as well. You know, you ever watch one of these movies or TV shows where someone's saying something particularly offensive, and you say, you know what, their face is in the right place just now for them to get slapped across the face, and many times they do. You know, like an uppity kid or just an insensitive adult, you know, says something to his wife and. Bam! Right on the side of it. You know what I'm talking
and
about.
And you see things. It coming.
You see it coming.
That's what you're saying.
And how do you feel when it happens? You get that.
The payoff.
Like wow, that person deserved that. Can we agree Donald Trump deserves a slap in the face? Can we agree to that?
Like, could it be like Melania?
I'm sure she's done it. Oh my gosh, she has to have done it. Melania, tell me you've slapped him across the face at least once. But I mean, you know, who is in the position to slap Donald Trump across the face? And you know, is this
like
okay
nice
to talk about? Can I say this?
Open hand, like
open hand slap across the face, like you see in the movies, like you see on TV, and you cheer when it happens because it's the right thing to do. This is the right thing to do. If you disagree with me, please tell me. Tell me why I'm wrong. OTW@2600.com. I'd like to know why does Donald Trump not deserve an open hand slap across the face? You know, hard enough to make a good sound. And hard enough to wake him up maybe a little bit to realize that he's a jerk and saying terrible things that are hurtful and harmful. And then maybe we can get to the reward part of this, where whoever does it, we give them a coupon for something. I don't know.
We don't know that the Secret Service doesn't wake him up every morning that way.
I know everybody wants to do that. But someone really has. You know, I've been advocating the pie in the face. That's a long tradition that we've had in this country.
Some sort of wake-up call.
But apparently you can't do that anymore. Apparently that's not considered terrorism.
I think Mueller could slap him.
I think Mueller will slap him in a different kind of way. Well, things to look forward to. Things to keep in mind. I want to thank everybody for calling in. We are out of time, unfortunately. We'll be back again next week unless talking about slapping Trump across the face is not acceptable, in which case... It's been fun, it's been nice, and we'll see you somewhere else. Wow. Okay, we are...
Good night, everybody. Good to be with you.
Out for the night. OTW at 2600.com. Good night.
Bye.
I don't need a passport to walk on this earth. Anywhere I go, because I was made of this earth. I'm born of this earth. I breathe of this earth. And even with the pain, I believe in this earth. So I wake up every morning and I'm stepping on the floor. I wake up every morning and I'm stepping out the door. I got faith in the sky, faith in the one, faith in the people rocking underneath the sun. Because every bit of land is a holy land, and every drop of water is a holy water, and every single child is a son or a daughter of the one earth mama and the one earth papa. So don't tell a man that he can't come here, because he got brown eyes and a wavy kind of hair. And don't tell a woman that she can't go there, because she prays a little different to a God up there. You say you're a Christian because God made you. You say you're a Muslim because God made you. You say you're a Hindu and the next man a Jew. Then we all kill each other because God told us to. No, hello, hello.
Follow me, 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 foll